You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas. A little later on in the show, Frank LaBeouf and Don Hutchinson will be here, and we've been taking a look at the fixtures for some of the big boys in the Premier League and how congested their fixtures are right up until Christmas, and whether or not this will actually see a team like Everton, Aston Villa, or maybe even Leeds be its surprise winners in the Premier League. And speaking of the Premier League, obviously the big story over the last 48 hours is the proposals of Project Big Picture. You can just see the back page of the newspapers here, revolting, uncivil war, football at war, the Times going with fury at the big six power grab. And if you, in case you've missed this, let's just fill you in what kind of this is all about. The Daily Telegraph breaking this story. The Premier League will be reduced to 18 teams. There'll be a playoff then between the third, fourth and fifth place championship side with a 16th place team in the Premier League. Away with the League Cup, away with the Community Shield, and the Premier League will give 25% of its annual revenue to EFL clubs. Well, let's welcome, shall we, Ian Dark and Mark Ogden into the show to discuss this in a little bit more detail. Mark, I want to start with you. We've heard a lot of negative rhetoric around this since the story broke. What is the positives? What are they trying to sell you on here?
It's a good question because, like you say, it's been wholly negative. I've not heard anybody come out and say this is a good idea, apart from Rick Parry, whose idea it was. You know, he sold it to Liverpool and Man United and other big clubs. But ultimately, the winners in this will be the richest clubs in England. They will have the opportunity to pull further and further away. Yes, you know, there's an offer of £250 million straight away for the EFL, £100 million for the FA. And the idea is to save these clubs from extinction, because a lot of the clubs are in real trouble now. But there are strings attached, and the strings attached would be that the big clubs will get a greater say and a greater slice of the action going forward, which means that they'll just pull further and further away. So the likes of Leeds and Aston Villa and Newcastle, these historic big clubs that seem to be on a bounce back right now, will never be able to get anywhere close because they're pulling up the drawbridge. The big clubs are pulling up the drawbridge and taking all the money with them.
Ian, you've made no secret, very close to Portsmouth. This would help them, wouldn't it, in the short term?
Well, I think it is a carve-up by the big six. There's a lot of glossy wrapping here, and you know, it seems on the surface like an easy solution to the current problems caused by COVID for the teams in the lower divisions. And yes, that money would be welcome. But one of the proposals is to scrap the League Cup. Well, that makes a fair bit of money for teams further down the pyramid. So there's one controversial element. For a start, I mean, this is not going to happen. This would be like turkeys voting for Christmas for a lot of the teams away from the big six. So they're not going to vote for it. I don't see it going through unless it is just a starting point for negotiation and there is a lot of modification that goes on. But there'd be no more Blackburn Rovers, no more Leicester City surprise stories if this happened, because it would be the elite ring fencing itself.
So what's the point, Mark, if they knew that no one's going to vote for it, if the turkeys aren't going to vote for Christmas, why even make this public?
Well, I guess you start with a radical plan and in the end you come to some sort of agreement which is a watered-down version. So I guess that it's a starting point and it's a radical starting point and it won't get passed through. It is very much like the idea of a 39th game, which is probably, I think, 10, 12 years ago now. That never got off the ground either. I think there is a solution needs to be made. The lower league clubs don't get enough money out of the big clubs at the moment. They're really struggling. I think the percentage shift from what it used to be prior to the Premier League is unrecognisable now. And Ian made the point about the League Cup. You know, this time last year, I think Rochdale played Manchester United at Old Trafford, and I was speaking to their chairman. They're a League One club, and he said that just by playing Manchester United at Old Trafford and getting a game on TV and the crowd that came with it, they earned £493,000 from one game. Now, that was enough to keep them in business for 3 months in terms of paying the wages, paying the staff. That sort of money is huge. So I don't understand why Rick Parry, the chairman of the EFL, is actually advocating a plan which suggests getting rid of the League Cup, because that is a real meal ticket for a lot of these clubs. So it doesn't stack up. But ultimately, football in England does need to find a way to balance the books a little bit more. It'll never be equal. The big clubs will always claim a greater share, but I imagine that what will happen is there'll be talks and there'll be some sort of compromise down the line. This may also be a kind of a power play with the government as well, because there's a real bone of contention right now about fans in games. You know, we've seen in Europe that lots of European countries are letting fans in. In England, that's still been blocked, and I think there's a sense of, right, well, if you're not going to help us out, the government, we'll do something that's really going to create headlines and create a fuss. So that, it may be a power play, but I might be giving them too much credit for that. But I do think there's a lot of behind-the-scenes politics at play, and obviously this will never get off the ground in its current form.
What's the solution overall? We're seeing a lot of the teams in the lower leagues face bankruptcy, face administration, Ian, because of what we've seen over the last few months with regards to COVID. What is the solution that you would put forward?
Well, I think there's got to be a bailout from the Premier League. A sensible figure has got to be agreed, because if you look at the recent England team, a lot of those players started playing non-league football or were loaned to non-league clubs. So the pyramid is really important, I think, for English football in its present state. So I think the government have got to help. They've given a lot of money to the arts. I think now they've got to help these communities, because football teams are huge in those communities, in places like Rochdale. We've seen Bury go out of business. We've seen Macclesfield go out of business. Those football clubs have got to be kept going. So a combination of money from the Premier League. I mean, there's huge amounts of money being made by the game. So it's wrong, really, particularly in a situation like this, that any clubs are going out of business because of what is happening with COVID. And I think Mark's right about they're trying to make a point to the government here, because they want at least 20% crowds back in, and there's no reason really why that can't happen away from the hotspot cities.
Ian, you mentioned the fact that a number of those England players that played against Belgium and beat Belgium the weekend came through the lower leagues. England, of course, favourites to win the Euros. I don't think that's even in doubt, is it, Ian? I'm still trying to fathom how on earth you can watch the likes of France, Portugal and the quality that they have within their sides. Yet still, for some reason, the bookies have got England as the favourites to go and win the Euros next summer.
I think blended into that is the fact that the semi-finals and the finals will be at Wembley. But I'd agree with you, they're not favourites. They played Belgium yesterday. They got the breaks in the game with a few decisions. Very tight offside decision to rule out that first Belgium goal from Carrasco. Then the penalty decision was soft. The winner was deflected. But give England some credit, because they did improve a lot in the second half. They upped the tempo. They got more compact. They closed down the supply lines to Lukaku and could have scored a couple more goals. So in the end, although they rode their luck a bit in the game, it was a good win. And remember, Belgium hadn't been beaten for 2 years. But are they favourites? No, they're not the favourites for the European Championship. For me, the team that I really think should be considered a lot more than they are Portugal to win it again. I think they're something like 16-1 with the bookmakers. They've got a better team now than they had 4 years ago.
Portugal got some good quality players coming through, aside from Cristiano Ronaldo. Mark Frank Leboeuf speaking on yesterday's show, talking about if he was an Englishman, he'd be really concerned about their defence going into the tournament next summer.
Absolutely, because I don't think England have a centre-half you can rely upon right now. I mean, you know, what's happened to John Stones, what's happened to Harry Maguire, these guys are out of form or out of the team. So I don't think England are favourites, because the bookies aren't stupid. They realise that a lot of English fans will put money in England. And no, I mean, look, if England win the group, which they should do considering they are playing all their games at home, they will play either, I think it's France, Germany or Portugal in the second round in Dublin. So they will lose home advantage for the toughest game. I don't even see England getting past the second round, yeah, because I don't see them beating Portugal, France or Germany. So we have to look at the draw. For me, England are probably fourth or fifth favourites. And I think France still are the team to beat, because they've got quality in every department. And, you know, with Kylian Mbappe, he's a superstar, isn't he? I think France for me are the favourites. And England, I just think it's going to be another summer of disappointment if we actually get a Euros on.
That's something to look forward to. Thank you very much, gentlemen. Just a reminder, ESPN FC back with you tomorrow. Plenty of international matches for us to look back at. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
International football, of course, dominating things at the moment. But I tell you what, when domestic soccer returns, it returns with a bang. We've just taken Liverpool's schedule as an example. Take a look at this. Every 3 or 4 days, there's a match. And it's a proper match as well, because the Champions League is starting later. So that got us thinking, gentlemen, as we welcome in Frank Leboeuf and Don Hutchinson to the conversation. How well equipped do you think, Don, are these big teams when it regards to rotating? Because this isn't the Carabao Cup, the FA Cup anymore. Every game will matter.
It certainly will, and it's going to be testing. You're right, Dan, you can't just throw youngsters into them fixtures that we just saw Liverpool that are going to be playing. I mean, 10 fixtures in a short period of time. It's an incredible amount of fixtures. So behind the scenes, I would imagine masseurs, physios, the sports scientist department are going to have to be on their game to try and get the players ready for the next fixture that comes around.
Let's take a look at the odds, shall we, as to who will win the Premier League. And why I wanted to do this is that we can highlight the teams that have no European involvement as well. And out of those that are the favourites, you've got Everton, Aston Villa and Leeds, I suppose, also in the conversation as well. Frank, you've got those teams in the Champions League. You've also got the teams in the Europa League, where even in that situation where you could field a weakened side, you've still got your manager away. You're still going to have part of your first team travelling. This is far from ideal. And do you think that could lead to maybe an Everton or a Villa or a Leeds winning the league?
Well, it's possible. Of course it's possible. And of course it's an advantage when you don't have a European campaign and you can rest the players and play your best team, you know, every weekend. But teams like Manchester City, I think Chelsea, maybe two other teams, you know, have the players they need to cope with a situation. We can put some question marks about Liverpool, because Liverpool have, I think, 15, 16 players, and that's it. They're absolutely strong. If they are physically good enough to hold the whole season, of course they can go far and win almost everything. But we have to count on the pandemic and the fact that it was a strange pre-season, and we're going to have injuries. We're going to have players not feeling good, you know, physically talking. And so it's going to be an issue. So, of course, Everton, with the player that it just got, without having a European campaign, can surprise everybody. And so can be Aston Villa. We'll see. It's going to be very interesting to see how coaches are going to handle all the schedules and the fact that some players are injured.
Ian, do you agree with Frank? Liverpool could be the ones who could be exposed in this period?
Well, I think Jurgen Klopp and Pep Guardiola and the other managers who have teams in the Champions League most seasons are used to it. But it is more crammed this year, the schedule, and it is going to test everybody. I think the sports scientists will have their work cut out, keeping the managers informed about who's ready to go every 3 days. And remember, if you're travelling into Europe, you have to go the day before, you don't get back to the day after, so there's less time on the training ground. So your point, Dan, might be quite a good one. We've seen a lot of crazy things happen already this season. I wonder if we're going to see a lot more crazy things happen as the season develops. Remember, Leicester pulled off their 5,000-1 title triumph in a year when they had no European football.
Don, where do you stand on Liverpool and their depth?
I think it's pretty strong, but you know, all it needs for Liverpool is maybe an injury to Sadio Mane and Mo Salah or Virgil van Dijk. We've seen Alisson, who's going to be out for 6-7 weeks, and we've seen what happened to them over the, you know, the course of last season when he wasn't in the side and at the start of this season. So I think Liverpool are a strong side and a strong squad, but like any team across Europe, you take the main top, you know, the main two or three main players out of their side, and they're obviously not going to be as strong.
Frank, what's it like when you've got all of these fixtures back-to-back with every single game mattering? Is that a good thing for a player? Is that what you kind of live for? Do you kind of go into autopilot, or does it really take its toll?
You might go to the autopilot and see what's going on, you know, every game, and don't really care about the fact that you won or you lost, you know, because you 3 days after you have another game. But it's very exciting for a player. I mean, I loved for like almost 10 years having that schedule, the kind of schedule, because you don't train. And it's boring to train.
Right.
What we like is to play games. And it's absolutely fantastic. Now, after seeing that, you have to think about sleeping well, eating well, drinking well, resting well, and having some treatment with the physios. But no life outside of football, which is the really compulsory if you want to achieve something. And that's the kind of life, like a monk, let's say, just a football player monk, and you just think and pray football until you're fed up and you quit, like most players do.
Don, I can't imagine you and the Liverpool boys when you were playing with Stevie acting like football player monks.
No, that wouldn't have went down well in that camp in the early 90s. But Frank's absolutely right. The later on you get in your career, when you're a lot more disciplined about the game, the best thing about, you know, the whole process of playing football is the games, and training sometimes can actually get in the way. And when you've got a really hectic schedule, it actually becomes, I wouldn't say easier, but you've got to be robust, you've got to be hardened, and the games just keep coming thick and fast. And you just get, as you said, Dan, autopilot. You play, you know, play Saturday or Sunday, then you're Tuesday, Wednesday, then a Saturday again. And the weeks and weeks can then fly by as long as you're fit and you're durable, and more importantly, you're disciplined.
Don, do you think this overall could see a much tighter league?
I think so. I've got no idea. I mean, we've all, I think, got an idea who we think is going to finish in the top four and who we've got an idea of winning the Premier League. And my tip was Liverpool. And then you go and watch Aston Villa beat them 7-2 at the weekend and you're like, well, I'm not sure that, you know, what's going on. I got asked the question today, will these crazy results carry on throughout the season? And I honestly think they will. I honestly think with no fans inside the stadium, no adrenaline in the players, I think we're going to see a lot of teams play a lot more free, as we've seen in the Bundesliga and in the game so far. The away wins are coming out on top more so than the home wins. So how do you actually forecast anything these days? It's difficult.
Well, we asked Frank Leboeuf to do exactly that, as we did the others. The start of the season, your top four. Will there be any changes after the transfer window shut? Well, let's take a look at what Frank went for. Still sticking with Manchester City to win the league. Chelsea are still second for some reason, Frank. Liverpool third. You've got Leicester up into fourth. You've fallen out of love with Manchester United in the Champions League spot, Frank.
Yeah, because what we saw about Manchester United is quite appalling, you know, lately. And I don't see the club reacting and the players reacting well enough, you know, this season to pretend to anything. And it's really thing what I it's really what I think. Why do I don't change Manchester City and Chelsea for the reason that we exposed before, that the fact they have almost two teams and they can rotate, which is not the case of Liverpool. You would have, and on top of it, you would have asked me the question a week or 10 days before that they've been smashed by Aston Villa. I would have changed my mind and say, okay, no problem, Liverpool will be second or first.
Right.
But seeing that, something goes wrong. Something went wrong. So it's clear that it's hard to answer to the question that you asked me, who's going to be the first fourth. But I tried, and I changed my mind only for Manchester United, because Manchester United, for me, is going nowhere this season.
I get your point with regards to the depth in squad, but what have you seen from Chelsea that's given you any sort of indication that this is a team that is capable of finishing second?
Well, you know, for the reason that I explained before, when I gave the first four teams finishing in the first fourth place, is because Chelsea, with the player that they have maybe the possibility to finish second, and because Liverpool, I think, can be, and some players.
But Chelsea haven't been very good, Frank. From those opening matches, Chelsea haven't been very good at all. They look really vulnerable at the back. They don't look particularly cohesive going forward. It's just you being stubborn, isn't it? Your former Chelsea ways, no, and you just can't change your mind.
I might be stubborn, but you are impatient. You know, did you see Chelsea playing with the real lineup, with the real 11? We didn't see Ziyech. We just barely saw Thiago Silva. We still are waiting on Pulisic to come back. I want to see that. Then after you can ask me the question. But because you asked me the question after the first day and now after the fifth day, so you know, I have to answer. I just say that Liverpool might be blasé because of two fantastic years, and it's going to be a problem for them to all the games you just showed to us before we started the fantastic ESPN show.
Frank saying, like himself, Liverpool have become arrogant, Ian.
I don't think that's true, and I don't think ego is going to be a factor at Anfield. They might have other factors. I mean, that 7-goal defeat they had at Aston Villa, that wasn't really a one-off because the defence has looked shaky for quite a while now. And there will be some concern about the lack of clean sheets, I think, at Liverpool. Add in the crowded church. I still think they're the favourites to win the title. I don't think you can write them off on the basis of one bad game. It will be interesting to see how they react to that in the Merseyside derby this weekend.
And Dom, where do you stand on Chelsea?
I think I've got them third, and I stand by that. I think they're a very good side. I don't think they're as good as Liverpool and Man City. I think that the teams that are trying to get into the top four, they seem to be the best equipped. As Frank said, once everyone's fit, I think Frank's certainly got an idea what his best 11 is and what his system is. But it's difficult to try and judge them at the moment on where they're at. I mean, Edouard Mendy now has got an injury, so that's going to be worth keeping an eye on. Who's going to be, you know, the number one while he's away? So I think Frank's got some issues there. They're not the finished article. I think defensively they still don't look sound. But I like their midfield and I like them up front. I think they're a good side.
And why Leicester and not Spurs in your top four, Frank? Considering how good they were at Old Trafford and how well they've started the season.
I saw a couple of games, you know, from Tottenham, and I don't know where they stand, you know. Are they getting better?
Yes. But they are getting better. Of course they are. They lose against Everton, seem to regroup, and they've been really good since.
They improve in my list of the first six, because they were outside of the first six, and I put them fifth, even before the Gunners. But I can't put them in the first four. I mean, they won a couple of games, but we don't know where they go. You know, we don't forget that they have Mourinho, and we don't know where Mourinho is going to react, because he doesn't act. He always reacts. So we're going to see what's going to happen. And on top of it, you know, I know I'm you being arrogant. the only thing I can say is, you have to pick teams. Of course, people are going to be unhappy with the list I'm going to make, but it's my own one, and I believe that it's possible. I don't know the truth of it. I don't know if it's going to be that. It's just what I feel. But if I knew everything about football, meaning if I knew even the results, I would be a billionaire, which is not the case.
But you're a paid analyst. You come on the show as a pundit. You should know. You should be able to give us the definitive top four, Frank. That's the way it works.
That's my feeling, and my intention is to share the feeling with you. But you don't seem to be happy. I don't know, because I guess you don't like Chelsea. That's it.
That's it. On that point, just a reminder, Frank is the special guest on the Gab and Jules podcast. There's no Gab this week. Stuart Robson with them as well. You can download that latest episode now.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Well, that brings us to the end of today's show. Don't forget, Tuesday, the Nations League is back. You have Ukraine taking on Spain, also Germany against Switzerland. We'll be looking back at both of those games on the next edition of ESPN AFC. But for now, thank you very much to Ian and to Don and to Frank and to Mark. We'll be back tomorrow for more. Until then, goodbye. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Thank you very much, as always, for your tweets. Frank LaBeouf and Sebastian Schweinsteiger's biggest fan, Don Hutchinson, with us as well. We'll start with, good question. Was it weird seeing players from other clubs that you played against while on international duty? Was there ever any tense moments in the dressing room?
Was that weird? Oh, I don't even get that question.
So when you played for Scotland and you're up against teammates from the club level, was it weird?
No.
Take that one, Frank, will you? Let me try and process the question.
Oh, goodness me. It's not that difficult a question, Don.
I thought I was the French one.
I know. Don's struggling today.
I think it's always difficult when you play. It can be for international duties, you know, or when you play for a club like I was playing for Chelsea and I was playing against Arsenal, and I used to play against Thierry Henry or Sylvain Wiltord or Robert Pires or Anelka. It's the same thing. I played against Italy, I think. I played against England a couple of times, and you play against your teammates. It's different. Let's say it's different. You are ready to fight for your country and you don't care about your teammates when you play for international games. When you play for your club and you play against a fellow compatriot, it's more difficult to be hard on him. For me, it was my feeling.
It was tougher to be what? More competitive with him, Frank?
It was, yeah. When I played against Arsenal, it always been a problem with me because I was facing always one of my teammates from the national team. And I knew how important they were. So I say, oh, if I go 100% and I tackle him and I injure him, that will be a problem, you know, in the next game we're going to play together. The French press is going to hammer me. So I've always been in a difficult situation where I never thought about that when I was playing against England, or right. I don't know, Italy, or on the Netherlands. Never thought about that.
That's interesting. You were conscious of that.
Yes, because you're aware of the player you're gonna play against, and some players, you know, you hate them, and you're so happy to play against them because you're gonna sort some problems out, maybe. but on the other hand, you know, you have to be careful. And I never injured any player in my career, so I'm very proud of that because it's something that would have hurt me more than anything else, because we have a career, so we have to protect and respect everybody.
Don, hopefully that answer has given you maybe a little bit of insight into what the question was asking.
I've just about got it.
Good.
I've just about got it. No, it wasn't a problem.
No.
When you're playing in the Premier League and you're joining up with Scotland and you're playing with lots of players that are playing in the Premier League, and then you get to meet Craig Burley, and then you also think, oh, wow, this is going to be a decent trip. And then you meet the Celtic and Rangers boys. Wasn't really a problem, actually. It was a little bit weird in terms of seeing them because you played against them every week. But once you joined up, I think you just sort of park that and you're part of the same squad then.
Stevie, Don always shouts at the TV when I'm watching a match with him, and you've got international teammates playing at club level against each other, but they're chatting in the tunnel beforehand.
Doesn't bother me that. I don't really see that as a problem. I was quite one of these where I was quite friendly in the tunnel. Didn't mean as though I was going to be friendly on the pitch. You sort of be courteous. Some players that you like and you get on with, you have a chat. Some people you absolutely hate and you just blank them in the tunnel and then make sure you do the business on the pitch. But I never really have a problem with seeing people chatting and laughing before a game.
Frank, would you chat and laugh before a game?
Yes, no problem.
Right.
I'm like a guy, you know, driving a car, you know, but when I'm outside of the pitch, I'm outside of the car, so I'm very friendly and I'm very nice. But when I'm on the pitch, it's different.
That doesn't make sense whatsoever, Frank.
What you mean? Because when you drive a car, you get crazy.
Really?
You have another,
well, maybe you do with your Bentley.
Yeah, no, everybody does. Maybe you, I don't know, maybe because you drive on the other side of the car, you know, maybe you're calm, I don't know. But the rest of the world gets crazy when they drive, you know,
right,
because they think they're the king of the road. But, for example, I played against Mark Hughes after he left Chelsea and played for Southampton. And he's the player that I like the most playing with.
Yeah.
And I know the threat that he could be for a defense. And I came to see him in the tunnel before. I said, Mark, please, get away from my position. You know, go on the left side. I don't want to see you. Leave me alone, please. He laughed. And he came to my position, of course.
Of course. What are your road rage levels like, Don?
I was all right. I was quite calm. I think I'm quite a calm driver.
Yeah, it's Frank. I think Frank's got some issues.
Yeah, I think it's just Frank.
No, maybe because I'm French, I don't know.
I wouldn't like to stereotype. Which club is more likely to get knocked off of their perch this year? Bayern Munich, Liverpool, Juventus or Real Madrid? Ooh.
Oh, I think it's probably Liverpool.
You think so?
I think Bayern will win it for the millionth time.
Yeah.
I don't see Antonio Conte's Inter Milan challenging Juve unless Atalanta have some sort of mad run like they did last year, but just fell a little bit short. And I don't see Barca, you know, the shambles that they're in on and off the pitch challenging Real Madrid. So I think out of that group there, I think Liverpool have got the biggest task on.
What do you think, Frank?
Yeah, I agree. Okay. Bayern are so above anybody and Juventus as well. And don't see Real Madrid being annoyed by anybody, any other club. It's going to be a different story for Liverpool.
Why doesn't Frank pick up the phone and get Zidane and Deschamps and Benzema together to fix things up? We miss Benzema playing for the French side.
Because it's none of my business, I guess.
That's what stopped you in the past.
Yeah. No. I love Zizou and I love Deschamps and I really appreciate Karim Benzema, but I don't really know him. So I don't know. It's Deschamps has the only explanations, in fact, why he doesn't call anymore Benzema. And he's a stubborn person. He's a Basque. And the Basques are very, very stubborn, even if they're adorable
anymore.
People.
Good.
Well, I'm trying to be like you, you know?
Frank, what's the general consensus amongst French fans? Do they want Benzema in?
I would say that 5 years ago, nobody wanted Benzema anymore, and they were fed up with his behavior.
Yeah.
But lately, you know, the past 2 years, since Ronaldo left, and he showed his talent, you know, at front, leading even all the forwards in Real Madrid, being the vice-captain for Real Madrid, maybe, and I guess many, many French people change their mind and would be, I think, pleased to see Karim Benzema. I would be happy. I want to see Karim Benzema at front, especially with what we see now. I want to see Benzema playing with Mbappe. That would be interesting. Now, I cannot criticize Didier Deschamps. He has his point of view. I think he's been touched by Benzema's behavior and some friends' behavior and what happened in the private life. Mm-hmm. So it's why he doesn't call him anymore. And then you have to respect that. He's the one who decides.
Don, given the choice between Declan Rice and Calvin Phillips, who would you pick?
Oh, Declan Rice. You know I'm a Declan Rice fan. I said it last night when I watch him. He's like a Rolls Royce. He reminds me, and I think he can have a career Michael Carrick's had. I like Calvin Phillips. I think he's a good player, but he's not at Declan Rice's standard just yet. I think if you put the two players right in front of me now and you say which player is going to go right to the very top and command huge transfer fees, I think that's Declan.
Don, no one is going to give you a free Rolls Royce. Stop referring to it.
He's a Rolls Royce. Frank drives a Bentley. Don't you, Frank?
Yes, I do.
Very angrily, apparently.
Yes, and very fast. Is Bentley and Rolls Royce still English, by the way? Or I know Bentley has been I think Bentley has been bought by Germans. Yeah, you should know. It's English. Why? It's your country.
I don't know about Bentleys and Rolls Royces, do I?
You know, if our bad Peugeot, Renault, Citroën would be sold, I would know that.
Well, good for you. Well done. Congratulations.
I don't know.
When Don and Frank were young players, this is a good question, did they ever take any advice from senior players they were grateful for, or did it turn out to be bad advice? What was the best bit of advice you got when you were youngsters coming into a team from someone, Frank? Or Don?
I don't think I got any advice, by the way.
No, you got no advice.
From who? From
no advice. From no advice whatsoever.
You're driving on the wrong side of the road, sir.
from former players, former professional, or just from grown-ups like that, like my father was my coach, whatever it was.
Well, if there were no players here, let's impart the words of wisdom from your father.
The advice that my father gave me, he said most of the time you have to know where you're going to give the ball before you receive it. It means that you got the information. It means that you know where the opponents and your teammates are on the field.
Yep.
So you have to open your body, making sure that you see most of your teammates and most of your opponents. Like that you can decide before receiving the ball where you're going to give the ball, and therefore you're not going to be caught by the opponents. And it's what we see with De Bruyne. It's what we saw with Guardiola when he was playing. That's absolutely important for any players.
Don?
A couple really that stand out. I think John Barnes was always a good player to have at Liverpool, an experienced player where he was trying to make sure you enjoy yourself and your career absolutely flies by. And then my manager, Graham Souness, who was on my case every single day. And it got to a point where it was about 3 weeks in of Graham, you know, having a go at me every single day. And I went to see him and I said, why are you on my case every single day? And he said, the day I'm not on your case is the day I don't care about you anymore. So that was a massive compliment. And then I took that to West Ham when I was probably 33, 34. And I didn't mean it, but I was on Mark Noble's case every single day.
Right.
And then he literally asked me, you know, why you on me? And I sort of had to refer back to Graham Souness, was on me. The reasons why I'm on you, because I see a real player in you. And for the same reasons, you know, when you like someone, you tend to have a go at them most because you can see the talent.
Good bit of advice I got from an old boss was, Dan, stop giving your opinion. No one cares what you think. I think it's quite good for a presenter. No, but in theory, that's actually quite good advice for a presenter, because you and the boys who played
there. Yeah, but you didn't listen to him.
No, sometimes I forget that advice, obviously.
I'm commentating as well, Dan.
You're more tricky than that.
Yeah, and commentating, when you speak to people like Ian Dark, and you speak to the best commentators, you ask for their advice, and they say sometimes don't say anything.
Yes.
I think the worst co-commentators, in my opinion, are the ones that just ramble on and just talk absolute rubbish while the game's going on. If you've got nothing to add, just don't say anything.
Yeah. Frank, maybe you could listen to that.
Okay,
any club you wish you played for but never got the chance?
Oh,
Don, yours is obviously England, yeah?
No, don't be silly. I was at Sunderland and I was leaving Sunderland and I had two clubs to go to. One was West Ham for the second spell and the other one was Glasgow Rangers, who was managed by Dick Advocaat in the Champions League. And I'd never played in the Champions League. I played in, you know, European Cups with Liverpool before, but not Champions Leagues, Super Cups, etc. Cup Winners' Cups, excuse me. And it was a massive decision. And in hindsight, I wish I'd have went to Rangers and tried Scottish football and played the Champions League, but the pull of the Premier League in West Ham's second spell was too much of a lure for me.
Frank?
I have the regret that I didn't play in Germany. I had the chance and opportunity to play for Borussia Dortmund before coming to Chelsea.
Oh, wow.
But it didn't happen. And when I was playing for Chelsea, John Toshak, who was the coach of Real Madrid, wanted me. And I didn't go too far on the discussion because I was pleased at Chelsea. And I think Chelsea was asking too much money and I was like already 32. So it's maybe a regret, you know, playing at Santiago Bernabeu. But I was so pleased at Chelsea, so I didn't complain about anything. So everything was good.
Wow.
But Bundesliga, I would have loved to play for Bayern Munich or Borussia Dortmund, for sure.
How excited is Don about the Merseyside derby this weekend now that the internationals are over? They're not over, Roger. There's still many, many, many games to be played.
Is there still games to watch?
Still going. How excited are you, Don, Merseyside derby?
Massively excited, Dan, because I think it's a chance for Everton to put a marker down. If they can beat Liverpool, which they haven't done
You played for both teams, didn't you?
Yeah, but I think it's a chance for Everton at Goodison, which they haven't beaten Liverpool.
Who would you be supporting?
Do you know what? Everton.
Everton. Wow.
I was captain of the club. But it's a chance for them to put a marker down. If they beat Liverpool, I think they convince everyone that they're certainly in a title race.
Who do your kids support? You've got three boys, Don. Are they into football?
Max is up at Sunderland at the moment. He's not really sure, actually. I think he's a West Ham fan. He was a Liverpool fan when he was young because I played for them. And I think he's, because we live in Essex, he's gone to sort of West Ham side. And the two boys at the moment, the twins, they're undecided. The one's got a Liverpool kit, one's got an Everton kit.
Right.
And one's got a Barcelona and a Real Madrid kit. So it's up for them. Yeah.
Do you follow any other sports apart from football, Frank?
I used to follow every sport, you know, like Formula One, tennis. And you know what? I gave up for Formula One when Damon Hill won the World Championship one year, having the best car. And then he came to a new, a new team.
Constructor,
with a bad car, and he finished last the year after. So I say, okay, it's all about the cars and not about the pilot. So I gave up with the Formula One. And I used to follow tennis, but I didn't follow any game for Roland Garros because, I don't know, the atmosphere is not there. I mean, it's like the Merseyside. The Derby, no atmosphere. It's strange to follow. So I love every sport. I couldn't say that I follow more one than the other. If there is a big tournament, a big event, I'm gonna watch it because I love sports.
Damon Hill, Don?
I'm with Frank on the Formula One, though. I'm a Formula One fan. Me and the boys sit down every Sunday and watch the Formula One, and we watched it yesterday, and we absolutely love it.
Favourite movie, blooming heck, here we go. Final question. Favourite movie of all time?
Godfather 2.
Oh, that was quick. Godfather 2. I'd go Goodfellas over Godfather.
That's good.
Schindler's List.
Frank, all the movies you've been in?
Schindler List.
Wow.
The Schindler List.
God, what a movie
Best
that
movie
is.
Best movie ever.
Yeah, that is something special.
And Back to the Future. Oh my God! Right. Back to the Future.
Right, that's quite.
That was great.
Quite.
You know, the opposite way.
Yeah, that's quite eclectic.
You have to have fun.
Schindler's List and Back to the Future. I like that. Yeah. So you're going good. Anyone else? Yeah. Don? Godfather.
Loads of random ones. I like stupid stuff. You know, Dumb and Dumber, Ace Ventura.
Okay.
Random stuff that makes you laugh. But the gangster movies, I think, always
liar,
get me.
Liar.
Yeah.
Liar, liar.
Dumber.
Frank's laughing to himself. Jim Carrey movies. Okay, that is it. Thank you very much, everyone, for joining us. We'll be back tomorrow for more. Until then, goodbye.